practice as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, automatically deleted again, and one of the things, especially considering the number of things that happened this week and including today, I'm really concerned about how to encourage my kids to be discerning. So I'll get into that. But first, a postcard came today, or yesterday, from Julia. My friend Chris enjoys his grandkids. I would love to enjoy mine. Can I please? Love, Dad. The answer effectively is no. But another postcard to George. 88 days and 88,000 jumpy jacks to go. Please join me on December 8th, 2023 on the top of Big Frog Mountain for the millionth. Love, Dad. And the good news is, well, just real quickly, I goofed yesterday. I erred. Tragedy of tragedies. You'll find that on the website where I have the jumping jacks listed. I goofed. I decided to do 1,000 a day for the last 100 days. And because of all the things that just went kaplooey yesterday, I only did 900. I erred. I mean, this is a federal offense. One side, you know, I thought about this. I was in bed and I realized I didn't get them all done. And I said, I'm going to have a good night. The issue is because even though I record 1,000 a day, many of these days I do an extra 100 or more. Simply because, and I don't record them because I'm trying to do the 1,000 a day. I will do 1,100 today in order to get it back straight. These are the technical details, and life as we know it depends on getting these numbers right, right? This is what is serious. Other things, oh no, that's trivia. This is serious. But either way, but you know, the thing is, I did, you know, I am down, 77,000 left. And it really, as each day goes by, it makes me feel a little, this might happen. And, you know, it concerns me. It concerns me in a good way. And there's some nervousness because occasionally especially when I take a hike, I've noticed my left hip. Sometimes I have some soreness. And, you know, today was Friday, which was typical for my day to just stay home and work all day. But again, my plans and the Lord's plans are different. We discussed today Proverbs 16:9. The heart of the man plans his way, but the Lord establishes steps. Kind of like, so I had plans, but my plans did not work out because I got a phone call from Mike Day. And I listened to him. I mean, he was almost in tears when he called me. I mean, what I heard was a really nervous fellow. So I said, okay, be there in an hour. I hadn't eaten yet. You know, I had a smoothie in the morning, but I hadn't eaten yet. I actually made myself yet another smoothie just so I had, you know, the banana and the eggs in me. And then I went and spent some time with him. And apparently he did take some medication. He seemed much better by the time I got there. But one of the things, what I saw is, because, you know, what it reminded me is yesterday I talked about when I took Jack as a 6-8-year-old into the shower to cool his body down because his mind was going kaplooey. What I saw today with Mike was a mind that was going kaplooey. And, you know, you'll check that in the dictionary. I don't know how to spell it, but anyway. I wonder if that is legitimate. Anyway, because apparently I did talk with James, another gentleman I've known for a long time. I tried to emphasize to Mike when I talked with him because he was trying to offer me things. I mean, he offered me this really fancy lamp that he has, 100, 150-year-old lamp, whatever. And And he wanted me to, you know, because he's, again, getting rid of things. He gave me the knife from last visit. I didn't, you know, things changed before the end. He also offered me his truck. And it's kind of like, well, one, no, to me, it's a curse. But it's a 1999 or whatever truck. And it's kind of like, you know, if I wanted a truck, that's the kind of truck I would have. I've actually driven. I put many miles in that truck. Not only driving my stuff here, but driving Mike all over the place to Chattanooga many times, picking him up from prison, things of that nature. So I put some miles in that truck, but I don't want the truck. And I do, you know, I was thinking, I'm not dealing with somebody who's, and apparently what James said is that because medication was stopped and whatnot, or it's been refocused to keep him comfortable because he is dying. So whether he's going to be around for months or days, don't know. But apparently, I think it's his liver or whatever is failing. He had some alcohol problems, cocaine problems, things. You know, when you're a cocaine dealer, you probably use your product. So he's had some difficulty in his life. One of the things that was also interesting, he had a Bible laying there, and apparently somebody pointed him to Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. And it's kind of like, oh yeah, I know that verse. I know that reference. What's the verse? And I discussed this with Chris, because, yeah, there are a lot of references, but references in the verse. Yeah, I know the verse. I know the reference, but I don't put them together. It's kind of like, but anyway, for by grace you've been saved through faith. This is not of your own doing. It is the gift of God, not a result of work. So no one may boast. And it was kind of like, if I could think of what that verse was, I would bring it up. But he was kind of off in La La Land, and so I didn't go there. But anyway, it was an interesting time. So my plans for the day changed radically. I wanted. Over the week, I've seen several things. You know, again, when I eat or when I try to wind down at night, I watch a few things. Some things that I find of serious interest. First, I do want to remind you, I did send a card to Julia. You were fondly mentioned in yesterday's voicemail. It'd be wonderful to embrace you again. Love, Dad. Because I did mention Julia and that she is bound to Isaac yesterday. But I know that's a pressure point, but I think fondly of Julia. Julia's my girl, and I love her. Love to see her again. I remember the embrace because I did go to see her about 10 years ago, and I love her. She's my daughter. But just three videos because they were important, and then I want to discuss discernment quickly. I'm doing something terrible. One is this guy, Brian Berletic. He's in Thailand. U.S. Marine, I think. Now he's there, does some commentary, excellent commentary. But he talked about U.S. Prep's Taiwan proxy versus China, NATO postures as Ukraine falls. So he does a lot of stuff, very interesting stuff, very rational review of war and military things. It doesn't go through all the fluff. Oh, this, all that, and whatnot. He says, "Well, look, here's the actual accounts, and here's the actual evidence, and whatnot." One of the things he did is he pointed to a article where somebody went to Taiwan, the Taiwan ROC, Republic of China, and went to the community and simply ask about their history and I forget exactly what it was like. What is their relationship to mainland China? And apparently the majority did not realize that Taiwan is officially recognized by apparently was the Constitution of Taiwan as part of China. Not an independent country. They're part of China, recognized by their own constitution. But their people don't realize that. It is the U.S. We formally recognize Taiwan as Taiwan ROC, Republic of China. We formally recognize Taiwan as part of China. But we do the saber rattling and all the other stuff in order to say, oh, no, they're independent. So we say one thing formally, but informally and for PR reasons, we say the exact opposite. So it's not just us here in the U.S. that don't know this. Apparently, the people in Taiwan don't know this either, or a lot of the masses. Because it was Chiang Kai-shek, who is, you know, one of the leaders in China. There was turmoil, and he went to Taiwan. I think it was called Formosa at the time. And all sorts of tensions and whatnot. Then, you know, over time, it was called the One China Policy was established and recognized basically throughout the world, including in Thailand, Taiwan. Taiwan, Thailand, you know. Anyway, in Taiwan, Taiwan ROC. So it's an interesting dynamic. And one of the things I thought about is one of the expressions you hear in the U.S., oh, separation of church and state. You hear that over and over and over again. And people will talk about it, including people, you know, who should know better, as if that was part of the Constitution or a law or something of the nature. No, it was a letter. It is a quote from a letter to the Danbury Baptist Convention or whatnot by, now I don't remember if it was Thomas Jefferson or John Adams. I think it was Thomas Jefferson. One of the two. It's not policy or anything of that nature. It just has become tradition because the expression separation of church and state. There is a wall of separation between church and state is in that letter. And it's just that line is repeated over and over again. How many people in the U.S. would say, oh, yeah, that's the law of the land? No, it's not. You know, it simply is not. And see, this gets to the discernment question. And so on the same thing, the Duran, this is the Alex and Alexander, Alex Christophorus, Alexander, anyway, they have a very good dialogue on world politics. A lot of it is about what's happening in Ukraine because that's popular. But they did one, the Blinken Doctrine, a two-front war with Russia and China, which was interesting. Not, you know, yes, he's talking about Blinken and U.S. politics. Normally they go other places, but it is kind of West versus. But what he talked about is related to a speech that Blinken gave. You know, he is our Secretary of State, our representative for the U.S. to foreign countries. And it was apparently absolute garbage because, as he, what did he say, not talking points, but, just, you know, sensational things, just full of it, full of these sensational ideas. Ooh, you know, like the separation of church and state, those kind of ideas, but not rational. And one of the things he pointed out, because he talked about in the case of a speech given by President Kennedy at the time, where it was substantive, it may not have been ideal in what was said and so forth, but it was substantive. We don't do substantive anymore, we do fluff. And the description of that, I think, was great, because he's talking about the way our discernment, we're decaying culturally, and you know, it's often talked about the Lincoln-Douglas debate 150 years ago, whatever it was, where it went on for like 7 hours and it was substantive. You know, a 7-hour debate? No, sorry. We do the, if it can't be done in 2 minutes, if it can't fit in 2 tweets, it's too much. So we've changed a lot. And the thing that I do find that you see this, there are many things that have caused this. But one of the things that I think is fascinating is, I think I've mentioned this before, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it before, the debate between presidential candidate Kennedy and presidential candidate Nixon. Because the debate apparently was heard on the radio. It was the first televised debate, 1959, whatever. It was the first televised presidential debate. On the radio, Nixon won. On the TV, Kennedy won. Because we've switched to not the content of the message, but the presentation. Because Kennedy came across a lot more classy. And this is where I think we see the quality of the presentation. The presenter means more to the audience than what is presented, which gets back to discernment. And one of the other ones, just before we get to the scripture, is from Max Blumenthal. He gave a speech to the Ron Paul Institute. Ukraine to become, quote, big Israel. I think it was a fascinating discussion, and I have it there because, again, I think it was fascinating. And, you know, because it relates to, you know, there's the issue about the various things around Israel, the country of Israel, and there's the perception issue. Because there is the Zionist idea. Again, the Christian Zionists are trying to say the country of Israel's fulfillment of Scripture, whereas I would suggest that's not true. If you look at history, but again, people don't look at history. Schofield came out with the Schofield Reference Bible. It was, I think, just the King James translation with a bunch of cross references or notes and whatnot. And it gave us the introduction to dispensationalism. And with that, it set up a mindset that could be used to foster the idea of the Zionists returning to Israel, the country of Israel. This happened long before. And who sponsored it? Who paid for it? The Rothschilds. They sponsored Schofield. And so, you know, which later end up with that document that said that you know we'll we're going to back up Israel or the Jews will have a country or whatever. What is it called? That doc. Oh my, I'm not prepared. Which was long before it happened, like 10, 20 years or more. And you can see a lot of things were set up. Again, the idea of 6 million dead Jews goes back to the 1800s. So you can see that maybe there is a story being set up. And then when you promote dispensationalism, it became really popular. So who gets promoted today? Well, the obvious example is, I assume he's still the preeminent spokesman in the U.S. is Hagee out of San Antonio, who is paid often directly by Jewish organizations. So a so-called Christian pastor is being, because he's promoting dispensationalism and that, oh, the Jews have some sort of special something. I'm sorry, that's simply not true. But that's a long discussion in itself. But the issue is, because that it is a dogma that's accepted, if you make any challenge to it, like I just did, you will be persecuted and you will be considered, oh, what you say, everything you say is wrong. And one of the things the Max Blumenthal talks about is just as that scenario has happened with the country of Israel, it's the same kind of thing happening with the country of Ukraine in a similar way, not identical. I don't think they have anywhere near their prowess, but if you say anything against Ukraine today in the United States or in the West, you're a bad person. You obviously hate them. You're cruel. You're a Putin puppet or whatever. So, but rational dialogue, no, we can't have that. And it's interesting, I'm seeing yet another, Stoltenberg or some of the nature, who's the head of NATO or some of the nature, came out recently and said in a speech, and this is a big deal, the war in Ukraine started in 2014, not 2022. If the head of NATO says that, maybe it's because they understand this whole scenario is falling apart and they got to cover their behinds. Because if you can start to shift the focus that it wasn't the unprovoked attack that we heard, oh yeah, and you know, it's apparently in Ukraine, there was a news report of Zelensky giving his speech at the UN, and then they, you know, they clip in the crowd watching him and so forth. And apparently the reality is, when you look at the cameras that the UN has, the crowd shrunk dramatically when he spoke, because the pictures that they showed to the Ukrainian audience had Zelensky in the audience. It's kind of like, you are listening to yourself, you know. So what they did is they cut two things that were unrelated together to make it look like they lied. They simply lied. And of course, if you listen to his speech, I mean, it was one lie after another after another. But again, the point is, you take that speech, it was lie after lie after lie. But would you know? Do you have the discernment to know? Discernment. Well, okay, before we get to 30 minutes, before we get to 2 hours, discernment. Do we see this idea? Just a couple examples, three examples. Philippians 1:9. And it's my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what is excellent and be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. So this is a prayer for somebody to have discernment. Okay, what is discernment? Well, let's look at that in just a moment. Romans 12, verse 2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God and what is good and acceptable and perfect. That you can make a rational discernment of what is good and acceptable by God, not by an organization. And then Hebrews 5:14, but solid food is for the mature, for those who have the powers of discernment, trained by the constant practice to distinguish good from evil. So it's kind of like, maybe this is important. Maybe this is really important. So what is discernment? Well, discernment is... It comes from the word diakrisis, which is the noun version. The verb version is diakrino, which is dia, through, and krino. Krino, to separate, to put asunder, to pick out, to select, to choose, to approve, to esteem, to prefer, to be of opinion, to deem, to think, to be of opinion, to determine, to resolve, to decree, to judge, to rule, to govern, to contend together, to dispute, and so forth. So it is, and I think, you know, the idea to separate is, you know, as it starts, you know, we saw the idea to separate good from evil. So when we see that, to distinguish good from evil, the Hebrews 5:14, But powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. This is good, this is evil. And if you see them together, you can't tell one from apart. You need to be able to separate them and see, this is good, this is evil. Now, okay, I've separated the two. Why is this good and this evil? That is discernment. And I think, and so, have their powers of discernment, or that you may discern, or and things of that nature, in all discernment, those kind of things, through separating, through judging. And, you know, again, the idea of judging is to say, this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad, this I like, this I don't like, this tastes good, this tastes bad. Those things are judgments. And we have to, you know, we get abused by the misuse of the judge not, that you may not be judged. That's a long discussion itself. That's highly twisted, because you're called to judge rightly, not judge at all. Because again, if somebody says something, take the example I gave. Oh yeah, just real quick before I found out, somebody found my F-35. Anyway, I did that apparently was found, because I was there with Mike, and it was on the, he has his TV on, and I saw there that the F-35 was found, and I thought, oh, anyway. But anyway, so somebody asked, oh, you're in Taiwan. Are you an independent country, or are you part of mainland China? Can you distinguish between one answer being right and one answer being wrong? Can you also, when the question becomes a bit more complex, we formally acknowledge we are part of China. We politically state we're not. The U.S. formally acknowledges Taiwan as part of China. We politically state it's not, and we do the saber rattling. You know, this idea of we're going to head to war with China because China's evil. We're the ones that are doing the evil things. China, if you look at a map, is on the other side of the world. Between China and Taiwan is the, what do they call it? South China Sea and Taiwan Strait and things of the nature. That's that part of the world. If you look at the map, we're way over here, not there. What business do we have of going to the other side of the world and say, we are going to decide for you? What right do we have? Are we God? No, we're not. We're provoking. We're provoking. Does the young, especially, but do people in the United States understand Taiwan, we officially recognize as part of China. We officially recognize as part of China, yet we are promoting the idea that they're independent, and Xi Jinping is trying to take over the country. He's the head of that country. So why do we fuel this argument? It's an interesting question. You know, a good example of, because one of the big powers of Taiwan is TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation. They are a massive company, very influential, but it's not the one that people think about, because they are, I think, probably the world's largest semiconductor manufacturer. Their factory in Taiwan is, I mean, phenomenal. A multi-billion dollar facility with equipment that is just remarkable, because they put a whole lot of money into this equipment because it produces chips in very large numbers, very precise, and of course very powerful. And one of the things they produce is the chip that goes in the iPhone. But they're produced in Taiwan, but they're manufactured by Foxconn. Foxconn, which, you know, gained some notoriety several years ago because they have these massive, it's basically a city that is owned by Foxconn that is their factory, and they have people living there and so forth. Because, I mean, people live where they work. They have the restaurants, entertainment, whatnot in this city that's owned by the company. And one of the things they became known for is around the dormitories that people live in. They put nets, and they're called suicide nets, because a whole lot of people said, enough of this. And in their dorm, and I think it's often said 12 to a room dorms, people would jump out the window to commit suicide. And they actually, I don't know if it's still, but part of the contract you sign is you pledge not to commit suicide. And when they say, we need more people to hire more people, they got flocks and flocks and flocks of people. It's an interesting dynamic. So it is fascinating. But again, that one of the points here is, what's made at Foxconn? The iPhone. So the chip is made in Taiwan, and the phone is assembled in mainland China, shipped to the U.S. And from what I understand, I don't keep up with this, although I did see I did get this really offensive commercial about be nice to Mother Nature, to be, you know, eco-friendly or whatnot, which is really bad. But anyway, they apparently came out, is it the iPhone 15 or whatever, 46? Well, I don't know. I don't keep up with it. But they came out with it to rah-rah sensation, and Huawei came out with their phone shortly thereafter. Apparently blows it away. And it's cheaper and so forth. And people are saying, what? 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 This can't be. Apple's, you know, God's gift to mankind. But Huawei does this terrible thing of attempting to compete as opposed to attempting to regulate. They do have, you know, the Chinese Communist Party behind them and so forth. But the culture, and again, one of the things, it's, what do they call it? STEM. Science, technology, engineering, mathematics. The people who graduate from college with that kind of degree in China is something somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 1. Even, yes, part of it is a larger population, but small part of it. Because we don't teach engineering in the U.S. We teach conforming in colleges. You get your certificate of conformance. Whereas they still have, yes, you must conform, but you must conform and think. You must be able to do engineering. And so what's happening is, just like we're losing militarily, you know, the you know, our U.S. Army, we're gay friendly. We have more women fighting. Whereas the Russians and the Chinese, they'll show you, we have macho men fighting. And then we have the people, you know, college education is, I get my certificate in order to make the big bucks, and I play along. And then you get the guy who comes along, says, no, my interest is engineering. Says, forget college, I want to learn. So I go learn and do a lot of things. But then, of course, I become the anathema, especially if I end up in the corporate world, you know? Because you must be a part. And that's the problem. Because I would suggest part of it is lack of discernment. what is engineering? Being able to check, distinguish the right way from the wrong way. Anyway, my concern, the reason I give you these things is it's not that Max Blumenthal or the Duran or Brian Berletic is the reference. But I suggest what they said offers more substance. And what was set before you is substance. Now, do you have the discernment to say, are they telling the truth or not? Or are you do you determine the truth by what MSNBC tells you, or Fox News, or the U.S. government, or your beloved president? Is that your reference? Or do you have a mind to think? Can you discern? Can you discern good from evil? I am concerned for my own kids. And just one other thought on that, because it's mentioned in Max Blumenthal's talk. He talked about, because he's talked about this before, and you know, I've checked into some of this. DIA is the application that was put out in Ukraine a year ago. And it's been considered, it is talked about, it is promoted by the U.S. government as a model for other countries. It is basically a cell phone app, a program that you put on your phone that allows you to connect to your government. So government, they talk it, pay your taxes and getting government benefits can be done through this app. They also have the e-enemy application, which has been there for over a year now, I think. So you can report, there's the enemy. They're the Russians. They're doing this, that, or the other. We see this, so we're going to report in. And people say, oh, isn't this wonderful? So the community can tell the government, so the government can protect them from the invaders. Is that what it's for? I would suggest, no, again, this is discernment. It's the excuse. It's the excuse because what is it? It's the same thing we saw in the Third Reich. It's the same thing we saw in East Germany during the period of the Stasi, turning your neighbor. That is what it's for. So they say, oh, look, you see a battle going on. Report that information. Report that you see Russian soldiers or whatnot coming in your community. Report that you see your neighbors interfacing with somebody Russian. Report that your neighbor speaks Russian. Again, remember, the Russian language was outlawed in Ukraine. Think about outlawing Spanish in the United States. And then if you hear somebody speak Spanish, you go to your cell phone and report that person. That's exactly what this is. That's not close, nearby. That's exactly what this is. Do you have the discernment to see that? And the U.S. is trying to push it on other countries that we have the influence on that are not as strong as other countries like the U.S. So their population won't fight back. Maybe they're under stress or whatever. A lot of the countries, you know, that are under stress in Africa, well, let's go help them. Let's get their citizens on board with this. We'll give you the idea of, oh, look, you get government services. You don't need this, that, or the other because it's all on your cell phone. So it's convenient. And they're tracking everything you do. You cannot have I was thinking about this in my walk today. Getting short. Yeah, right. You know, I pointed out, and maybe I should give you the satirical thing that was done a while back. You know, when the Utah data center went live, there was a lot of commotion. Oh, this is a bad thing and so forth. Who talks about it anymore? At the time, I think it was Bill Binney who came up with the calculation that his estimate was 700 megabytes for everyone, I don't remember if it's domestically or in the world, of data storage capacity at the Utah Data Center alone. Obviously, this is many years ago, and you know, the storage capacity continues to grow exponentially. So we can easily say a terabyte per person. And I was thinking about it. I don't remember the numbers. Gee, too bad. I think it's only like 10 gigabytes of data. May have been 100. I'll have to find it out. Do the calculation again. That's all the data. If you had the audio of you, if you had a microphone in front of you and recorded the audio that you hear from the moment of your birth to the moment of your death, it's whatever, 10 to 100 gigabytes. So consider that analogy. The Utah Data Center has enough capacity to record the sound of every moment of your life. And of course, as Russ Tice exposed in the late 90s, early 2000s, he started with room 641A in San Francisco, and it's been admitted there's several dozen of these equivalent facilities in telephone data centers around the country and around the world, that a copy is made of all the data flowing through the data center, goes into this room, and is shipped off to the Utah Data Center, the San Antonio Data Center, Fort Meade, and the Donut in the UK. All phone calls, all the time, all around the world, are copied. That was a big deal several years ago. But, you know, that's old news, so we don't care anymore. Do we have the discernment to know this is a problem? That's old news. Doesn't matter anymore. Because we can trust in our government. Trust in the state with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge it, and it'll keep a boot stamping on a human face forever. That's the life my kids and their peers will have. Do they have the discernment to say, this is what the world is doing? Can I distinguish right from wrong? Can I discern? Can I separate right from wrong? If I can, then do I know what to do about it? Fundamentally, starting with trusting the Lord. A situation comes up to you, and you have to decide, what do I do? Do I decide, what can I get away with? What benefits me most? Or do I have the discernment to know what is right and wrong? What is obedience to Christ? I want at least one of my kids to be able to say, I don't care what's prudent. I don't care what benefits me the most. I want to be obedient to Christ because I trust Him. I don't want to be obedient to an institution because I can do better in this world. I want to be obedient to Christ because I trust Him. I want to be obedient to Christ because I trust Him. I want to be obedient to Christ because I trust Him. I would love to hear at least one of my kids say that, mean it, and live it. Gee, I didn't do a short video. I love my kids. I want them to be discerning. I'm afraid my wife is not showing that model. Jim Cross clearly is not. I went and saw a man today who we're talking, the term ex-con is applicable. A felon. Someone who has spent 7 years, I think, in a federal prison for being a pretty high-end cocaine dealer. I can see in his character what's in it for me. I've seen that for years. I've known this guy for over 10 years. I can see that in his character. But I can also see that he's a human being created in the image of God. And he's the one that the Lord placed in front of me, and I'm called to love him. So in spite of his past, in spite of his present, it's not that I trust the Lord. I trust him, that he truly is repentant and whatnot. I trust the Lord, and I try to reflect him to Mike. Because if I can't do that, if I can't do that to someone, to the thief on the cross, then I really can't do it to anyone. It's not that hard. It really isn't that hard to treat Mike as a human being. You know, he's not someone who has been evil to me. He's actually been quite nice to me. I mentioned to him, I don't remember why, but there was a period of, there was some frustration for some reason. I don't remember what it was. I just know there was some frustration. And at the time, I had an apartment, and his was, you know, two rows of apartments, and there was the parking lot in between. I could look out my window and see almost directly across his apartment. And during this period of frustration, whatever it was, because he's an excellent guitarist, superb guitarist, he grabbed one of his guitars, came over, and he sang me a song. It was very good. I mean, this guy, I mean, the way he plays, superb. What I saw in that was a man trying to show me love in the way he understood. I tried to show him love, but when he needed a ride back from prison, I took the 2-hour drive, I think it was, to go pick him up in his vehicle. But still, I was given his keys to go drive, pick him up. He bought me lunch. But I invested basically the day to try to show him love. When he called today, and you could tell he was in tears, an hour later I was at his door to try to show him love. Do I expect anything from it? Well, you know, he gave me the knife. But no. My objective is to love. Why? Because I have learned, I think I know to discern what it is to love and what it is to be callous. I don't look at Mike as, what is it that I can get from you? I look at Mike, what is it to love you, to reflect Christ to you? Again, I want my kids to understand this and live it. Please. I'm ridiculous. I have to go do another 100 jumping jacks to get to 1,100 a day to catch up from yesterday. So, yeah, you have to excuse me. My lady, my wife, I love you and I want you back.